from Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
Good to meet up to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we move on through the month of September and head toward October, which has always been pro-life month, and we're pleased to welcome in Susan Money, the head of 40 Days for Life in the great Sacramento area. Susan, good day to you.
Yeah. Well, hello to you as well.
It's been too long since we've talked.
It has been a while, but we're back at it again. You know, these...
You guys just don't give up.
No, we refuse to give up, and... It's just about the time you think, well, gosh, is this really working? Then there's two saves in the same day.
Oh, my.
And if I'm not mistaken, which I could be because my memory is what it used to be, we actually had three saves on one day, and that was a record. That was the most beautiful record that we've ever reached.
You know, Susan, if the entire 40 Days for Life all over the world, in the entirety of it, in all the years it's been in operation, if it had one save, it would be worth it.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. And I just feel very privileged, honored. It's kind of funny when people come out to the sidewalk and they're kind of used to coming out after a while, then they'll go, I just love coming here. And newbies look around like, really? And it's like, no, that didn't come out the right way. Once you go and you realize, my gosh, you don't know, you just don't know if you're going to save a life or not that day, mm-hmm. but just by being there, you know, the women going in, sometimes you think, oh, they didn't even look over here, but we just keep saying, we're happy to help, we're here, and then they turn around and they go out the back door, and of course, Wynette's always waiting at the back door for them. And so we get them in the front yard, we get them in the backyard. we try to catch them any way that we possibly can. And it's just really an unbelievable thrill when you've had the opportunity to at least look someone in the eye and say, oh, I really, you know, we want to help. We're here to help in any way. And to tell them, these are some of the ways that we've helped other women. And some of them kind of shrug it off. It's like, sure. And then they'll come back out and say, you know, tell me more. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, wonderful. So.
Well, and you don't have any idea how many people drive by and see you and are influenced. You know, it's the old pebble in a pond thing, you know, like,
that's right.
Like maybe you're not getting a bolt of lightning and somebody on the spot changes their mind. But, you know, people have influence. I'm sorry that more people don't realize that role modeling, how, you know, if you walk into 7-Eleven and there's a young person, a group of young people there getting Slurpees or something, and you're carrying a baby, and if you act like the baby is the greatest thing that ever happened to you, you're having an influence on them. They're looking at you and they're going, oh, gee, that woman, that man, they really loves that kid. Wow, that's a good,
you
know,
betcha.
That's and you don't know, you know, 5 years down the road, maybe they're in a situation like that and they remember that moment.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just amazed at how many people will say, you know, we saw your signs and, you know, we didn't pay too much attention to it. And then this happened and that happened. And then we made the decision to keep our baby because we remember seeing the sign. Mm-hmm. But the one that says, take my hand, not my life. And the fellow said, when his girlfriend said, I'm pregnant, so what are we going to do? He said, all I could see was that little baby with its hand out saying, take my hand, not my life. Mm-hmm. And she said, do you want me to go ahead and make an appointment for an abortion? And he said, you know what? We can't do that. We just cannot do that. And they kept their baby, and he came by specifically to tell us, thank you for having those signs there. And the person who never got to hear about it was Barry Barnes, who was one of our faithful mm-hmm. sidewalk folks. But it was his sign on his car that the man had seen. He said every time he took his wife or his girlfriend to work, they'd go by that particular corner. And he said he didn't even realize that it was sinking in mm-hmm. until she said, I'm pregnant and what should we do? And he said he knew immediately what they should do. So, yes, it is never a wasted moment. Anytime you're out there, how many times in our life do we actually have the opportunity to stand up for what we believe in, to just really say, one, you don't even have to say anything. You just come and you stand, you have your sign, and that is a statement in itself. I've been working on a little newsletter that I'll be sending out tomorrow, and the one thing that struck me as funny, it's like, oh, my goodness, we have a lot of sign-ups for Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, which is the first opening day. Mm-hmm. But when I realized we didn't really need to have a lot of extra sign-ups, all I could say was, please come, because there has never, ever been too many of us mm-hmm. standing at the sidewalk at one time. It just doesn't happen. And the more of us that are there, the more it's a conviction in itself. All of those people have come to stand out there in the smoke, in the COVID, all of this other business. It's like they care enough. They're out there. And that is, I don't know. I just think that the Lord watches and he says, yep, thank you for being there. And he rewards the efforts by having babies be saved. And it's a whole group effort. Sometimes people will say, I didn't get to say anything. It's like, you are here. Because you are here, that person changed their minds. And so it takes everyone. It takes everybody there to make that impression for that one person who's going to come back out and say, I changed my mind.
Susan, when somebody changes their mind, do they also, I'm sure it varies greatly from person to person, but do they also say, can you help me in some way?
You know what? Some of them will. Well, they will explain on their way in, they will say, no, you don't understand. I have to have this abortion because of this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. They're saying, I can't afford this baby. And so all we can respond is, you know what? That's what we're here for. And we can offer you any kind of help. And sometimes they'll kind of like, yeah, sure. So what are you going to do? I said, well, let me see. What have we done? we've helped pay phone bills. We've helped get tires on a car. We've helped pay the back half of a rent. Mm-hmm. Whatever the need is for the woman. And the crazy thing is once you make that offer, oftentimes we'll give them our card and just say, call if you need anything. You mm-hmm. call us. And you know what? We never hear from them again. But I think what happens is they go home with a new conviction of, this is my baby.
Yeah.
And so, and a lot of them haven't even told their family that they're pregnant. And so they're just, they just needed to have somebody there to say, it's okay to keep your baby. It really is okay. And you're not alone. One of my favorite things to remind people, well, I'll ask, can you tell me what you're going to be doing next year? And they look at me like I have two heads. And it's like, no, you can't, because I can't tell you what's going to be happening to me in a year. But what I can tell you is if you abort this baby in a year, you may be so sad that you made this decision and you cannot take it back. There's no going back. And it's food for thought. And if they stick around long enough, those are things that you can tell them that truly stop them in their tracks. Well, especially when it's like, so what are you going to be doing next year? They go, I don't know. I know, that's the point. You see, in a year's time, look what can happen in a year. And so don't throw the baby out thinking that, well, this isn't a good time, or this I can't afford it, or whatever. You don't know what's going to happen in a year and how much better off you may be, and certainly you'll know that baby in a year, and you'll be grateful that you chose life for that little one.
Yeah, and you know, with from looking at it from the baby standpoint, but and I know you don't, you know, you're not there to moralize with them or anything else. You're just there to help them.
That's right.
But looking at it from the baby standpoint, it's not. This isn't a good time for that baby. It's the only time.
That's exactly right.
Period. It's the only time.
If you go in there, my life is over.
Yep.
It's just that simple. And I think for me, that was one of the staggering things to realize when I first went out to the abortion clinic. I was kind of nervous. I didn't know if I really wanted to be. I knew I didn't want to be there. But when I got out there and I saw those women going in, it just was like a slap in the face of, they're going in, and when they come back out, only one of them comes out of there alive. The mother comes out alive, and that baby is gone forever. And that is when I realized what the word abortion truly meant. Nobody says you're killing your baby. And we have pretty words to kind of work around that reality, and it's too bad, because if we called it what it is, I think more women might catch their breath and realize, oh, you know, to think about it again.
Well,
think
about it. The thing that would always stop me would be the uniqueness of that life, you know, that
yes, it's that, a you one know, time.
I remember I had a birthday the other day, and you know, we're sitting around the dinner table, my wife and our kids and our four teenagers, saying, well, if you had it to do all over again, Dad, what would you do? You know, that kind of thing. Like I'm 900 years old or something. Like,
yeah.
What do you mean, do it over again? I'm still doing it, you know. But you know.
Thank you, dear.
And I said, well, you know, first I said, I looked at my wife and I said, I would, if I could go back, I'd marry your mom the day I met her, you know. I wouldn't have waited at all. You know, I'd have married her. And then I stopped and I said, you know, if that had happened, we probably, if God blessed us, we'd have had kids, all right. But it wouldn't have been you four kids. It wouldn't
That's
have been,
right.
You guys would never have existed. So,
That's right.
So I wouldn't go back and change anything because you are four unique lives who had to be born, had to be conceived then.
That's exactly right. I think that's one of the most striking realities that sometimes people have not really thought through. We don't realize how sacred it is that we're even here.
Yeah. the chance that... that a specific human being could be born is infinitesimally small. It's not just when when mom and dad met and when you were conceived. It was when grandma and grandpa met, and you could go back. It all had to happen that way for you. I mean, people would have been born all right, but it wouldn't have been you.
It wouldn't have been you. And I think that that can be quite shocking for someone to realize,
yeah.
You know, I never thought about that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, we won't have this baby this time. We'll have this same baby next year. No, you won't.
You don't. That's absolutely right. And I've seen some of the most pitiful, sorrowful men and women who said, we're just sick. We had an abortion because it seemed like a good thing, a smart thing to do. We didn't want to ruin our wedding pictures. I mean, they have all kinds of excuses. That man was the saddest, though. He said, we didn't want to ruin our wedding pictures because she ended up getting pregnant 3 months before the wedding. And so together they made the decision, you know what, we'll just go ahead and we'll abort this baby, and then we'll just have another baby later on.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's a piece of furniture. You know, we can't afford that couch right now, or that couch wouldn't look good in our wedding picture.
Well,
so we'll get it later.
Yeah, we didn't want to ruin our wedding pictures. Can you imagine? And he said, we got married, and he said, the elephant in the room, we've been married for almost 30 years. And he said, when we finally wanted to have children, when it was the right time, he said she couldn't get pregnant, that the abortion had obviously botched all of her ability to be able to have another baby.
Yeah, and, you know, lots of people for lots of reasons. I mean, infertility is a major problem. And
yeah.
I mean, some of us are very lucky, and some of us are very unlucky that way,
whatever you want to call it.
But to assume that, oh, this another child will just come along, that's a big assumption.
That's a huge assumption. you're saying that you can predict the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as I can tell, I can't predict diddly squat. I think I know what I'm maybe doing tomorrow.
You didn't predict what kind of year 2020 was going to be?
Honey, if I had seen what 2020 was going to be, I think I would have just said, you know, I'm going to hibernate for 1 year. I'm just going to take this year off. I wouldn't have wanted to miss it. The challenges have been phenomenal. And I have to say, if we approach all of this in the right way, we come out better people. We just can come out better.
It has very definitely been a challenging year, and for some people a very very sad year. And we've had a lot of good years, and God's still with us, and God's still in charge.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's despair is not in our vocabulary. I don't think the word's in the catechism.
That's one of the three D's. I was just reading that the other day. And despair was one of them. It's not a sin. But it's such a grave disorder, because when you give in to despair, you ruin all of the possibilities of what can be in your life.
Yeah.
But I just think that also, too, I think we've learned to appreciate little things like burying a loved one, carrying a loved one. You know, things that we just took for granted before this whole thing, and now it's like, oh my goodness, you know, you can't even go to the hospital and be there to hold the hand of someone you love.
Yeah, as sad and tragic as all these deaths have been, that's just one, that's just got to be a knife in the heart of people. I mean, you drop somebody off at the emergency room because they've got a sore throat or a cough, and they won't even let you into the emergency room. And I'm not faulting them at all, obviously. And the next thing you know, your loved one's in ICU, and you can't see them, I can't even imagine losing a loved one that way.
I totally agree. And so that's where my prayers have turned to a lot more prayer of gratitude. Thank you, Lord, for this. The new normal?
Yeah.
It's like, thank you. I will make the best of this new normal because I see now that even this normal can change between today and tomorrow. We just don't know what's in store for us. So appreciate what you have while you have it and right when you have it. And don't say, well, I'll take care of that tomorrow.
Nope.
Because tomorrow it just may not come for us.
That's right. That's right there in the good book.
Neither the day nor the hour.
Tomorrow's not, you won't know the day or the hour, and tomorrow is not promised. I will come like a thief
that's
in the
right.
night.
That's right. No guarantee.
So Susan, we're with Susan Money, the head of 40 Days for Life here in Sacramento. Has the pandemic affected your ministry at all?
I would tell you, I'm going to say no, in that we still have volunteers that are faithful. They come, they wear their masks. They understand that abortions go on whether there's a pandemic or not. And so, and the only way that the last chance, the last ditch effort to make a change for that baby's life is for us to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And our volunteers have been so faithful, just extremely faithful. It's very heartwarming. And so all I can say is they're not afraid. What's the hell saying? Be not afraid. Jesus, I trust in you. As long as you can keep saying those words, Jesus, I trust in you, then come to the sidewalk. No matter what's happening out there in the street, you're there and you're making you're making a statement simply by being there. I spent 60 years of my life hiding out, never having to say what I believed in. And after 60, the Lord said, "Okay, you had enough hidey time, Susan. Now I'm going to put you out there." And say, "Oh my goodness gracious!" It was quite a shock. But you know what? I'm so grateful that the Lord ruffled my feathers and took me to the sidewalk, because it's taught me so many things about truly living, preparing ourselves. Always we need to be prepared, to knowing that this is not a forever place. This isn't it. This isn't our home. This is just this kind of stopping off place. But yet we've had the privilege of living a life, and we want to make sure that every baby, every one of God's babies, has a chance to do the same. That's what we're there for, to give them that chance to live their purpose, because everybody has a purpose, and God has a purpose in mind. He has one for you. He has one for me, and when we deny that purpose, or the baby doesn't get a chance to live, how very sad. We're kind of just taking God's place and saying, well, we get to call the shots. And I don't think that makes him really happy. I'm almost positive. it makes him sad. And so when you feel the nudge, you feel him calling, don't say, well, I'll go next week, or I'll go with this third week. Go that moment, go that day, because he's nudging you for a reason. There is some reason why you're supposed to be there. And I have been absolutely blown away how somebody brand new will come and say, well, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to do. And that will be the person that someone will walk up to and just pick up a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, they've the person that is brand new has changed a life and saved a life. It's like, holy moly, what if I hadn't have been here? It's like, yeah, what if you hadn't have been here? No one else could share what you shared with that person. We are so unique and special. And so when God gives you the nudge, please come. We're there Monday, Tuesday, Friday, Saturday, from 8 to 11.
And where's, give the address, Susan.
Yeah. It's at the FPA Abortion Clinic at 2322 Butanel Drive. And you can park in the Winco parking lot. Presently, they appear to be starting off at 11 on Wednesday mornings. And so we're following their schedule. And so on Wednesday morning, we will be there at 11 to greet them. We love to greet them. And on Thursdays, they're not there. And so to save our manpower, we will definitely be there when they are there. I also would say go to onto the website, to Facebook, go to www.40daysforlife.com/Sacramento, and there's a schedule there. Anything you need to know, any questions, and if you have questions and they're not answered there, my name is there, Wynette's name is there. We are more than happy to answer any questions. We just really want to encourage everyone to come and show your face out there, because it pleases Jesus. He says, oh, look who's out there. So come and please Jesus. How's that sound?
Susan, if yeah. You just mentioned Wynette. If people have any questions, is there a phone number they can call?
Yes. My number is 530-320-1614. And if I don't know the answer, I will find someone who does know the answer.
I'm sure you will.
I've been at it for long enough. I think I can answer most questions.
Very good. Well, Susan, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for all you do.
God bless
your ministry. And we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon.
Okay, that sounds wonderful.
Get another save.
You betcha. We'll do our best.
God bless.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
You too.
Yeah, that's Susan Money, the director of 40 Days for Life here in Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Mark Ross from the Diocese of Sacramento Black Catholic Ministry. This is the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for all you do and have done here in the Diocese for the Black Catholic Ministry. We're pleased and honored to welcome in Father Bong Rojas from St. Patrick's Seminary in Menlo Park. Father, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you too, Bob. It's great to talk to you again.
Well, we talked last week, and we barely got started before the old man Time said you're out of time.
Exactly. I think we just have way too good of a time here.
We were having way too good of a time, and more of the same today, I hope. Full disclosure, Father was my pastor at St. James Parish in Davis, and he thank goodness for the confidentiality of confession. That's all I can say.
What confession?
Never heard my confession.
It's so good. No, but I really wanted. I was lamenting last time. I was talking too much, but I realized I really did not get to talk much about the upcoming ministry days.
Yes, which are this Friday and Saturday. Friday, pretty much for school teachers and faith formation people like that, and Saturday for everybody. Saturday the 26th, you can go to ministrydays.com to sign up. Father, you're going to be one of the presenters.
I am, and I'm actually giving 4 presentations.
Yes.
On Saturday. So
are you going to do? Are you going to be bilingual for us?
Well, not bilingual, but 2 topics, and each topic will be given only in English and then only in Spanish.
Okay,
so
very good.
No presentation will be completely bilingual because very it will good. Just confuse a lot of people.
Including me, yeah.
and besides, if you do completely bilingual, you're able to cover less material.
Right.
So I wanted to cover as much material as I can on these 2 really very timely topics. One is on navigating the relationship between faith and culture in pastoral ministry. And that really will go into the whole detail of, with our multicultural parishes and ministries, how do we navigate this dynamic among cultures? But more importantly, what I'm going to look into is culture really even pertinent in our faith?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times you see here, I mean, you've probably heard of these arguments before. There's no Mexican Catholic, or there's no Filipino Catholic, or American Catholic. There's just one Catholic
right.
church, one Catholic culture. But the fact is that our faith is always going to be brought out within a particular culture.
Absolutely.
And the very first cultural expression of it is in the Jewish culture, where we talk about the Word of God, which is so universal, but taking place and taking flesh in a very particular culture with particular sets of tradition. And so to really go into that, and you see this the principles of how to do that. I will go into some documents of the church that really talk about this, particularly a missionary activity of the church, where we talk about the distinction of that and purification of culture itself. So how do we look into the concept of moving beyond the structure of one particular culture and then going towards the purification of culture? And then as we go through that purification, we become enriched, mm-hmm. especially with the celebration of the sacrament. So that's the first topic that I'm going to give, both in English and in Spanish. The second topic that I'm going to go into would probably be is the timeliest of all, which is feeding the flock in the time of pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And there I'm going to look into what are the different practices that we have, some good practices and some others not, that are not. I'll look into some of the ways that our parishes have coped in terms of feeding the hunger of the people. And once we go through some of those anecdotal, because there's only one survey that actually has some kind of a breadth or a wide scope on this, which was done by the San Francisco newspaper, the mm-hmm. Archdiocese newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one that I'm really aware of that kind of created this survey. But what I wanted to go into is, what are the principles that are brought out of these actions? So I'm going to look at three basic major areas in our faith, which is the ecclesiological principle. What does it mean to be church
mm-hmm.
When we're with all these practices? And then I'm going to look into the liturgical principles. And especially with one of the principles that the Second Vatican Council brought out was the full and active participation.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you're going through physically not there with the community, how do you fully and actively participate? And there are some ways that some people actually have found that they were able to fully and actively participate. And then the third principle that I would like to really look into, this whole idea of the God is greater than everything else that we do. So those three major areas, ecclesiology, what does it mean to the church, liturgy, and then our understanding of who God is. Hopefully that will be brought out on that session on feeding the flock.
That's a lot to get to in 50 minutes.
45 minutes.
45?
Oh, yes. I got it to science, Bob.
So let me ask you, is it easier or harder 45 minutes in Spanish or English?
Actually, with the language, it doesn't really matter for me, but it's much more difficult to make shorter presentations
uh-huh.
because you want to be able to be thorough. One of the things that I really do not like is just scratching the surface.
Right.
When I, I put my time on something, if let's say I'm a participant, and all I'm going to hear is the presenter stating the obvious. I thought, I could go somewhere else.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And so that's, I want to make this worth the time of the parishioner. But most importantly, I want this to be, in a way, life-changing. I don't want this pandemic to be just another footnote in our history.
Mm-hmm.
I want this pandemic to actually impact our lives from here onwards in a positive way, and not something that, I would rather want to just forget 2020.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You're hearing that all the time now, that 2020, it's a dumpster fire. It's just terrible.
Exactly.
Bring on the locusts, bring on the earthquake, whatever.
There's this whole thing that, this new trend now is when you say, how was your day? It's 2020.
Right. That's all
but
you have to say.
But you're not having a good day. And someone is asking, how was your day? It's completely 2020.
Yeah, 2020 used to be a good thing. I have 2020 vision.
Exactly. There was a show of 2020.
Yeah.
not plugging that show, but, you know, it's traditionally a good thing.
Exactly.
But now, I really want this year to be a year of learning that is non-traditional, not, you know, not something about all the traditional way of textbook and, you know, we are basically learning how it means to be a church in a way, in a time that is very difficult.
Yeah.
Here in the seminary, there was a tendency that to use the pandemic as an excuse for not being able to fulfill something or do something.
Right.
And I tell the students, that at least those are my advisees, I said, here's the truth. When we become pastors, we have to behave in our parish as if there is always something that's going to be different. And this pandemic, as severe as this may be, this uses the same resilience, this uses the same creativity that a pastor should already have. So in many degrees, this pandemic is no different from other situations. You know, you're going to have a crab feed in your parish, and all of a sudden, the boiler, the dishwashing machine, doesn't work. True story, by the way. What are you going to do? Just make excuses of not washing dishes? No. You adapt. You become resilient. You become creative. And in the same way, what we're doing here with this current pandemic is we are adapting. We are creating something new, and we don't just say, oh, God's just going to wait for 2021 for us to be able to continue our worship. No.
Yeah.
We have to be able to continue with our way of expressing our faith. And yes, from our perspective, it may not be sufficient. It may be inadequate. But guess what? As we've heard it from the gospel last weekend, the perspective of God is different from our perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, we might think it is inadequate, but who knows? God might think your very effort, just you putting on decent clothes before you turn on that computer or you turn on that television to actually sing and give praise to God in your living room is probably enough for that.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't know. We keep thinking that we could put in a standard of actions and not being able to really look at our internal disposition. You know, I keep thinking right now, this past, since this shelter in place started, what I have been doing is celebrating Mass. I think I mentioned this to you before. Right. I've been celebrating Mass on Zoom. And it was, you know, the feedback of the people and the comments, the conversations, I should say, that I've had with those who participated in there, they found this nourishing simply because there's this personal interaction between them and God.
Yeah.
Through the liturgy that we celebrate, as opposed to before, with some of them who would just go there in a very crowded church, and this is where I'm talking of the one in Manila, where you know they really are not able to focus on the Word of God and the sacrament that they're celebrating. So I think we have to really look inwards in our hearts and be able to fully evaluate our participation in the liturgy. I think in many ways, the full and active participation, without, of course, the physical reception of the body of Christ, which is probably the biggest thing, but in terms of our internal disposition, this is during this time, we have been confronted with that need, that we need to really examine our disposition, our when we go to celebrate with the Lord. So that I really hope that this year, if nothing else, would really highlight that.
Yeah, you know, Father, we say this to our kids every morning. We have four teenagers, and we say, you know, God's still with us. God's in charge. God's, you know, whether God's testing us or he's not testing us, or, you know, God's taking a vacation, God's still here. And this is the hand we have been dealt now, and we have to see it as, how does God want us to respond? There are a lot of people out there that are really hurting right now.
Right. And really, to we need to keep in mind the idea of a church.
Yeah.
A church, in our teaching, this becomes very evident. There's the document called the Constitution of the Church, called mm-hmm. Lumen Gentium. There's a teaching there that talks about the church is not made of bricks and mortar, but of people. And of course, we often call a building a church, but this pandemic really highlights the fact that the building is honored and respected because of who is there.
Mm-hmm.
And who is there is God and God's people. I used to help out before the school started. I used to help out in the parish to celebrate Spanish Mass on Sunday. And the pastor there, this is in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
The pastor decided to put the photographs of parishioners on the pews of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a priest celebrating, before he did that, I used to celebrate the Mass only in front of a camera. Mm-hmm. And maybe a handful of people, maybe three or four or five people. And now, seeing these faces that I used to see when,
yeah.
you know, physically they were able to go, it was very heartwarming to see those faces of the people.
That's
who would be
very interesting.
The other side. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, and the, it's interesting because that's, believe it or not, that's what the NBA is doing. That's what Major League Baseball is doing. They're putting all these, they let fans buy a cardboard cutout of themselves, and they've put it in the stands.
I'd like to say they got it from the church.
They probably did. They probably and the other thing they're doing, you know, they're piping into the stadium artificial crowd noise. Maybe you need to pipe in some people shuffling their feet, coughing, opening a book.
Babies crying.
Babies crying for sure.
Babies crying. You know that. I always recommend for young families to bring their children to the front of the church
to the front,
to celebrate.
Yeah.
And, yeah, because, you know, for babies to be sitting at the back of the church and all they see are people's behind.
That's right.
I mean, that's boring. So they need to be in front. And so their sounds are just, for me, they're glorious. I have 50 nephews and nieces, so that's nothing new
mm-hmm.
to me. And so to be able to keep that in mind that, you know, we are the church. And for me, as a pastor or as a priest who's celebrating in front of the camera, it to create this visual that yes, there are people who are being fed by this ritual, by this action. Again, the principle: people make up the church.
Yes,
I love that Baptist expression. We hold church, you know. our Baptist brothers and sisters, they love that expression. We hold church, and wherever we are, we can hold church, and whether it's in a parish building or over the internet, because we are the church, so we hold church.
Is it hard, Father, to deliver a homily with no audience reaction?
I at first it felt weird.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, it felt weird. But then I have to really pray that this is not a delivery. This is not some oration. This is really a conversation between the people and God and
mm-hmm.
myself. and bringing in the tradition and the scriptures. So bringing all of these together, for me, it really is not difficult anymore. And partly because for me, I think the reason is I've always done the Zoom, Mass on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually see the people.
Okay, yeah.
And when I see the people, I actually edit my homilies immediately, depending on who's there.
Okay.
So immediately, if there are children present, then I make sure that I'm able to reach those children. And if there are elderly or someone who is bedridden there, then I can see that they're in bed. Then I make sure that if I'm able to make those quick edits. But I think that's the difference that I have. Although when I was celebrating Mass in this Spanish for the Spanish community in San Francisco, there were people who were there. But I really have to go back to the principle of this is really geared towards the community. And I imagine in my mind that those people are listening.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't come naturally. It came from a lot of prayer.
Lot
of prayer.
Yeah.
I mean, you really have to dig deep so that it doesn't feel like acting. I mean, because otherwise it will look fake, and as a preacher, it will feel fake. Believe me.
Yeah. I remember the first time, and it was Father Ray watching him at St. James, and thinking, with great empathy, he did fine. But I thought, how difficult must this be, for him to not be seeing us. Fortunately, we weren't in our pajamas drinking coffee or something, you know, but uh-huh. to not be able to see anybody and yet still deliver the word, you know.
Well, think of it this way, Bob. You're on the radio the whole time and you don't really have a very direct interaction with your audience.
Correct. Yeah.
So you have to come from a point of authenticity.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just going to be reading a script.
Yep.
So we have to really come from the point of authenticity, meaning it really comes from our very hearts that the people who are going to listen to you or see you, they will be able to speak to your heart because you're pouring yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, whether it's with your radio station or during the bishop's hour or during the Mass and in the homily, it will just become almost routine. It's soulless, if you will.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So, in a way, you really would know how we need to be able to do that. And you should be able to give advice to the priest. Us.
Well, I probably should. I should do a little seminar, and I'll send it out to you guys saying, just pretend you're Bob Dunning on the radio.
But, I mean, again, it really comes from the point of authenticity.
Yeah.
We cannot, even more so than ever, we have to be very prepared in our homilies. We have to be able to not just bring, this is a difficult balance because we have to keep in mind that we're ministering to our community, our parish. So we're going to be using the story of our parish, of our people.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we also know that this needs to reach out a more universal community because of the nature of the internet.
Indeed.
And so finding that balance of being able to be general but not to, it doesn't dissipate into abstract ideas, that it's still very personal, that it's still very concrete, that's the challenge that I would say that is difficult to achieve.
Very much so, Father. Unfortunately, we are flat out of time again.
But at least we were able to talk about the ministry days.
Something other than basketball.
Exactly.
Father, we hope we can convince you to come back on soon.
I am at your service.
Thank you very much. And again, ministrydays.com. Father Bong will be giving two presentations in English, two presentations in Spanish. So sign up today. This is Saturday, the 26th, this Saturday, ministrydays.com. Father, God bless you and your ministry and everybody there at St. Patrick's. And we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Bob, and please thank Gabe, your producer, for being
here. I sure will. He's a gift from God. Hey, thanks, Father.
Thank you.
That's Father Bong Rojas. He teaches at St. Patrick's Seminary in Menlo Park, but is a priest incarnated to the Diocese of Sacramento and was my pastor at St. James Parish in Davis. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.